Hi everyone, this is Achyuta Bhava from Nightlight Astrology, and this is part 7 of a series that I have been doing called 10 Things That I've Learned in 10 Years of Professional Astrology. This past summer of 2020, in July, I realized I'd been doing professional astrology for 10 full years, full time. This is the only thing that I do. And I realized that over these 10 years, I have met with or worked on over 10,000 charts. And so, it felt like a good time to start reflecting on what I'd learned. In this series, if you watched it from the beginning, each episode of this series features a different crystallized reflection or insight that came from just journaling about what I've learned over 10 years. The purpose of this series is to give all of you who practice and follow astrology content and who experience astrology in your heart and soul as a positive spiritual part of your life, some insights that may be helpful. A lot of the times I think that when we share reflections and insights, they're not so original, right? They're just truths. And if we take the time to help crystallize and form our own insights, it may help others to say, hey, yeah, for me too, you know, and it's nice to hear someone articulate it. Or it can inspire you to come to your own conclusions and reach some of your own insights. So all of that being said, every episode I've had kind of like a phrase that I've used to capture the insight of the episode. This one goes like this. We are not our childhoods, and healing our childhood wounds will not solve all of our problems. So may sound like kind of a simple insight, but I think there's a lot to unpack here. And this could also be seen as a very potentially insensitive or controversial thing to say. And so if it immediately rubs you the wrong way, stick with it, because I think that in unpacking this, we'll get to a place that is, I think, very validating of just how painful and traumatic childhood wounds can be and how they do have the power to shape our lives. But I want to talk about this one because it's something that I see day in and day out in my practice for over 10 years. And it goes basically something like this. Someone comes in for a birth chart reading, and let's say the reading is less about prognostication of the future. There's a big portion of my work that consists of saying what's going to happen when, what kinds of themes and what areas of life at what time. And that kind of karmic weather forecasting is a huge part of what I do. But there's another part where people come in wanting to unpack the past, and people especially want to unpack the past because of the impact that it is having on the present. And a lot of this boils down to things that happened to us in childhood, whether it was from our parents or a family member or some other traumatic event that happened in childhood. People are bullied. People have parents that are terrible. There are all sorts of things that happen to us when we are young that are just brutal. And anyone who's lived, I can't remember who said this, but I remember in my MFA program, there was this quote that said, anyone who's lived to, like, you know, 21 years old, or anyone that's lived to 25 or something like that, has enough content to write about for a lifetime. Because first of all, it's important to just recognize that I would say, you know, 75% of my clientele has at least one story of being pretty seriously shocked or traumatized or experiencing some degree of pain that is still with them as an adult. So it's human that childhood is a state where, you know, we're very vulnerable, and we're in the care or handling of others. The world is often a rugged, rough place that does not handle with care or love or tenderness or patience. So a lot of us are wounded by childhood, some people far worse than others. So I'm certainly not trying to, you know, equivocate or whatever the word is, but it's not that everyone has equal trauma. That is certainly not true. Everyone has, though, it by and large, most of the clients that I work with could point to an earlier part in their life and say something really traumatic happened, and as an adult, I am still dealing with the consequences of it. It's relative. It's different for everyone. Some are worse than others, but that is a story that we all deal with. So first of all, let's just recognize that that's a truth. I want to read a quote from James Hillman that I posted last week in anticipation of this talk. And this quote is probably one of the more I feel like I got more of a controversial response to this quote than a lot that I usually post on my Instagram or whatever. This is the quote from James Hillman, who wrote a book called The Soul's Code and did a lot of work on child and family psychology, childhood trauma, and things like that. He said, "Our lives are determined less by our childhood than by the traumatic way we have learned to remember our childhoods." Now, this got a lot of yays and thumbs up, but this also, more than a lot of quotes that I choose, which are not so controversial, got a lot of people saying, "That feels really insensitive. I really don't like that." So that's what I want to try to unpack a little bit, because I find that this specific insight is at the heart of so many of my readings and is so tricky to address. And yet it's a part of my everyday life as an astrologer. So people will come into a reading and say, you know, "I want to know how, first of all, do you see in my chart, you know, the trauma that I experienced? Where is it? What does it look like? Can you describe it to me?" Which isn't that hard. Usually you can see the rough stuff, especially around family. But then the follow-up question is, "Look, this is still with me right now, and I feel like I'm still trying to overcome it. So how do I overcome it? Or do you see anything astrologically that could give me some insight on how to overcome it, or a time period coming up when I might naturally release this trauma from the past?" Okay, so, and astrology can do all of those things. Astrology has this amazing way to be able to address, "Oh yeah, look, you've got a Pluto-Moon conjunction in your fourth house. You know, maybe you grew up with a mother who was suffocating in some way, or you grew up with a violence in the home, you know, Mars-Moon opposition." There's so many different placements that could point to trauma in childhood or trauma as a child or in the home or in relation to parents. And so, yes, the chart can point to it. It is real. It is an aspect of our karma, and no one's denying it. Then the chart can also tell you, very insightful psychological insights that can be gained from the chart as to how those patterns may carry over at different phases and in different areas of life. A Mars Moon opposition could end up as it shows up in the family in one way, it shows up in marriage in another way, it shows up in work in another way, it shows up in health or self-esteem or psychology in another way. So that's a really valuable thing that astrology can do, is unpack the trauma and then see how the patterns of the trauma may play out in other areas of life, all of which is so amazingly useful for healing those wounds and healing traumas. Astrology can also say, "Hey, look, here's when that particular complex that has been so traumatic, that has repeatedly showed up in different areas of your life in terms of difficulty or trauma, here's another time where it's going to be triggered or activated," which is almost always an opportunity for healing as well, if we kind of take it that way, or if we have support in place for ourselves to meet the karmic moment in a manner that says, "I'm proactively taking this as an opportunity for healing." So astrology is really good for all of that. But there's also a level at which I'm also, in my sessions for 10 years, gently trying to push against a narrative that can be very destructive. And the narrative is basically like this. And this is why Hillman wrote that quote in the way that he did. Let me read it one more time. "Our lives are determined less by our childhood than by the traumatic way we have learned to remember our childhoods." So here's the myth that I also try to gently push back against a little bit, because I believe that oftentimes, in order to heal ourselves from traumas, we also have to heal our relationship with the existence of trauma itself, with its place in reality, and with its place in history, and with its place in our lives. So Hillman was pushing back against the idea that, you know, people, to a certain extent, the mainstream sort of popular psychology says, if you have problems now, the key is to sort of go back and sort of heal your childhood wounds. And if you get down to healing the childhood wounds, then you'll sort of be redeemed in the present. Your problems will be solved. You'll be happy. So there's a huge industry that's built around the idea that we got messed up in childhood, that the explanation for my current troubles or problems or dissatisfaction or fear or pain or whatever the case might be came from childhood. And if I can somehow go back there and, you know, like iron out the wrinkles in my childhood, internally through therapy, et cetera, that then, you know, I will be healthy and whole and happy. And now again, is there a sense in which trauma from the past lives in the body in the present? Absolutely. No question. I've talked to enough people to realize that, you know, if you're abused and beat up, your nervous system's going to store that in your body. You're going to have to deal with that as an adult in ways that are really tragic, and to sort that out and get to a space where your nervous system isn't just constantly on alert because of the trauma memory. You're going to have to do some physical healing, some mental healing. So it's not that, the past is just perception. That's where people sometimes take this in the wrong direction. They say, oh, you know, what Hillman was saying is somehow that if you just shift your perception of the past, that your trauma will realize it's just a fiction. That would be a really insensitive view and really not true. So, but that's not what he was talking about. He was going deeper into something which has to do with the nature of pain and suffering itself. So childhood is trauma is real. Healing our childhood trauma is real, but suffering is also real and can't be done away with or eliminated. In the yogic tradition, and really in the philosophical traditions that informed ancient Western astrology, like Stoicism, Platonism, Pythagoreanism, but the Pythagoreans or the Hermetics or the Orphics, these mystics said that, just like Buddhists, that pain and suffering is a part of reality. It's a part of what is, and it is originless, meaning, in other words, you could say it is eternal. There is a dimension to pain and suffering and separation and anxiety, and even fear, that are not something that have a beginning or an end. They are realities that are just co-present. They just are. And so one of the narratives that I try to gently push back against in my practice is this idea that something went wrong in the past. For example, sometimes the doctrines of original sin, in different branches of Christianity, there's different ways of experiencing or talking about or expressing the doctrine of original sin. But one that a lot of people are used to is that, you know, back in the past, human beings made a mistake. They messed up. They were good, but then they became bad because they messed up. And then sometime in the future, they make a choice, God intervenes, and the past can be healed because of this, you know, this intervention, and you can be redeemed and you can become good again. But the narrative that astrology is rooted in, the idea of what the soul is and of what we are, therefore, because we are all spirit souls, is that we are inherently made of the same essence of as God. And that our soul is inherently good, beautiful, true, that everything in the cosmos is beautiful, good, and true. And so there, and that the existence of pain and suffering even is a part of the fabric of that beauty, that goodness, that truth, and that divinity, that it is a part of it, that it's not. So in that sense, the origin of the soul is eternal. We have no ultimate beginning and we have no ultimate end. Our inherent value, dignity, happiness, bliss, truth is endogenous. It is who we are. It's not something we can lose, and it's not something we can gain back in any literal sense. Not only that, but that reality itself is not in need of saving, right? That reality itself is not lost and then found again in any literal sense. There is an archetypal sense in which things are lost and then found again. There is pain and hurt and separation, and there is redemption. There is good and evil eternally wrestling with each other. But the view that ancient astrologers held, the mysticism that informed ancient astrology, was not a story about I once was lost, but and then in the future I need to get saved. It's really important that we recognize that, because there is a way in which the modern The modern ego tends to look at itself like this. I'm a restoration project, right? Like I used to be good, somehow got run down, beat up, something bad happened to me, often by outside forces. And I'm not denying that those outside forces are not necessarily like, you know, someone who your father, your mother who beats you or something like that. Like that's not, you know, you don't have an experience of you doing that to yourself, right? That's you're victimized by someone or some other force. And so we have this experience of reality and of times in life, we feel like I have to, in order to be healthy and whole, I have to somehow fix that or restore myself to what I was before that happened. And what we, the counter narrative that we need to bring forward is that you've always been whole, right? You weren't, you know, things can happen to you, right? But nothing can touch your spirit and your soul. And this is why, for example, we have jazz, we have poetry, we have, you know, books of the Bible called Lamentations. We have melancholic, you know, blues music. We have the soul, and what brings happiness to the soul is not the absence of suffering, but the way that we are able to grapple with the existence of suffering and somehow see it as this rich, nutrient-dense ground for soul making, for the creation of meaning, and that is an opportunity that is there for us when times are both good and bad, whether we're lost or we're found. That the soul is not so much interested in whether I'm lost or I'm found as much as it is interested in, am I connected through the heart, through the soul, to what is? And so that's a shift in mind. That's a shift in consciousness that we have to be able to take on in this lifetime, while also and simultaneously embracing that there are ways in which we get beat up by others, by life, that we are traumatized or victimized, and that there is sometimes some real healing work that has to be done. Sometimes people will, the important thing though, is to recognize that trauma is a part of reality. And sometimes you can tell that people don't want it to be a part of reality. And I don't blame anyone. I don't blame myself when I don't want trauma to be a part of my own reality, although my trauma looks very different from other people's trauma. Because I don't want people to tell me that the pain that I am grappling with, that I really badly want to overcome, or I don't want to have to deal with, I don't want people to tell me, oh, that's all just in your head. Yeah, it's really offensive when someone says that. But at the same time, there's this weird way in which when we really don't want trauma to be a part of reality, that we have a way of ironically defending the literalness of its existence tooth and nail. This trauma is real. It is my trauma. You can't take it away. You can't invalidate it. It is not just a perception. It can't change. It's hardwired. It's in my nervous system. Don't you tell me that, like that, right? And we all do this. It's not, there's no one person or group of people on our planet that hasn't had this relationship to trauma where you experience it, you experience the trauma, you live the trauma, it stays with you. No one can tell you that it's not real. But at the same time, there is a way in which if we don't learn to make peace with its existence, if we don't learn to bring it in somehow and find the blue note in the midst of our suffering. And I say that because when I was a kid, you know, I really loved John Coltrane, and I played saxophone in band, my dad loved to play blues guitar, and I really loved blues music. And I went and studied, you know, MFA. I did an MFA in creative nonfiction writing, and I talked a lot about the mental health history of the people in my family and all the pain that it caused, alcoholism, abuse, this kind of stuff. But I've always been someone who has had to grapple with it from the standpoint of art, from the standpoint of beauty or curiosity or questioning or some kind of engagement with it. I've never been content to say, well, what happened to me personally was bad, and that's all it was. And as soon as I get rid of it or overcome it, I'll be happy. That's never made sense to me personally. And this is why I also gravitate towards what the Buddha said about suffering, what the ancient mystics said about suffering, that it's not that it's not real. It's that it is, it's like a jewel. So it's like, you know, reality is one of the, you know, realities, if reality is like a diamond, then suffering is one of the, if you turn the diamond in a certain way, part of reality shimmers and gleams back at you with suffering and traumatization and victims and things like that. But reality isn't asking us to be saved. It's asking for us to appreciate it. But to appreciate does not mean to say, oh, it's a unicorn. It's all just fairy dust and wonderful thumbs up energy. You know, it's not trying to say, take trauma and turn it into ice cream, make, you know, lemonade out of lemons. You know what I mean? But it is saying, take it in, you know, because the soul has nothing to be threatened by. The soul has nothing to ultimately save or heal or redeem. But the way that the soul, you could say, if there is a redemption, everything is redeemed in terms of love. Trauma, when it is loved, it turns into poetry. It turns into memoir. It turns into the rock that stubs your toe becomes the object of meditative contemplation and appreciation. There's an aesthetic value to it. Now, when you're in the midst of living through the reactions of trauma in the body, it's granted, it is not equally easy for everyone to relate to trauma in this way. Some people can't relate to trauma in this way and shouldn't be made to or told to, or people, you shouldn't look down your nose at someone else and say, oh, hey, you know, why don't you just find some poetry in your trauma? You know what I mean? Like, that's a big ask for people. And so it would be really sort of obtuse and insensitive to tell people that, well, you're dumb unless you react, you know, unless you experience trauma in this way. But what is the point of healing? And what should an astrology session do for people when it comes to dealing with trauma and the past, especially childhood trauma? It is to help us to remember the past in different lights. This is why astrology is multivalent. For example, I'm just going to show, there's in the author that, again, James Hillman, who spent a lot of time talking about this way of reconfiguring our relationship with trauma, not overnight, not through some kind of quick little meme that you share and then suddenly my trauma is gone. No, we know it lives on. We know it's stored in the body. We know that changing the story is a process, you know, but the language of archetypal psychology and of astrology is multivalent, which means I can look at that Pluto moon transit and I can say, you know, today, for example, there may be something that I do in my life that is very Pluto moon-like. Perhaps, for example, I am someone who researches things very, very deeply. I'm drawn into the depths of things and I have this very deep, you know, way of penetrating into the roots of something, very Mars Pluto or Mercury Pluto or maybe even Moon Pluto. And when I'm looking at an astrology chart for someone, one of the things that I'm trying to do is, if they say, you know, when I was a kid, I was ripped to pieces by my mother or my grandmother or something like that, Moon Pluto, let's say. She always told me I was imperfect. She always told me I was fat. You know, just imagine things like that. And she was always criticizing me, digging into everything I did or said or thought, and just planting these seeds of self-doubt, right? Now, what is my job? Well, it's not to say, oh, well, you know, that was just there to make you a level 10 healer later in your life. You know what I mean? Like, well, you had that experience so you can go and help those who are suffering later. No, for example, if I say, well, Pluto moon, or let's say Pluto Mercury, you had this experience of having someone sort of assault you mentally, verbally, critically, and penetrate deep into you and make you feel sort of violated. Now, as an adult, look, you have this really, say, prolific a career as some kind of researcher or investigator, part of the same pattern that your mom, you know, pushed into you is expressed in terms of the need to probe and penetrate deeply into things. Now, I'm not saying, so you see, if it weren't for your mom, you wouldn't be a great researcher or something like that. No, no, no. What we're trying to do is expose the way in which the patterns that we're here to experience express themselves in many different ways in our lives. And what that does, the ability to see that and experience that, it starts to weave together like a mandala, the dark and the light. It takes the vicious, hideous, victimizing qualities that we've experienced, and it marries them to other skills that we might have or other beautiful things we might have experienced, and it joins them together in the same archetypal fabric or tapestry of our lives. And that's what Hillman's talking about when he says our lives are determined less by our childhood than by the traumatic way we have learned to remember our childhoods. One of the things that Hillman encouraged people to do, in other words, was to see the way in which certain archetypal patterns that may exist in our childhood are not just things to overcome. They are realities that are inherent in our lives in many different ways, in many different places. And the more that we learn to see that, ironically, the more that we also gain some participatory flexibility, which means we can start to relate to these patterns differently. The narratives that we have in place, which oftentimes only reinforce the pain when they are telling us that, well, you were fine and then something got broken and then you've got to fix it later. That when we keep that narrative in place, that locks into place the archetypes, and they stiffen and rigidify, and then they can't be complexified. They can't start moving out into this broader tapestry. In which sense, also, if anyone tells us that it's our karma, we say, no, 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 you're evil. You don't tell me it's my karma. Why? Because then karma is punitive. If that's the view we're taking of our own lives, then of course, any thought that this may be our karma is going to come across like it's punitive. That, well, this happened to you because you were bad, and then you have to get good and then heal yourself in the future. But that's not what karma is actually about. Karma, if you want to heal your relationship with karma, you have to be able to diversify your ability to understand how karma infiltrates all areas of your life in a non-linear timeline, right? It's not, it moves backward and forward through time. Think about this, make this shift. Your karma is not punitive, it is narrative, which is a way of saying that when you learn to see the patterns of karma in an astrology chart, you're learning to see the way in which the same patterns shape multiple different narratives and timelines that are intersecting and crossing with one another. When you start to see your life in terms of multiple narratives, the idea that karma is punitive goes right out the window. Karma is something much more interesting and beautiful and meaningful and mysterious than it is punitive. Not only that, but then simultaneously, our suffering is the patterns present in the literal trauma have an opportunity to the pressure that we place on those particulars, the concretization of certain karmas, they release, and then the pressure we place starts moving out. Well, that same pattern I can see over here in this relationship I had in college, this class I took, and this, right? They start to move out in different areas of our life, and we start to remember differently. And the word remember starts to take on a very different meaning, which is to remember, meaning to put ourselves back together. If we've been dismembered by trauma, and then we feel that we have to put it together by overcoming trauma, what Hillman is saying is that if we learn to remember life differently altogether, whether it's good or bad, then there's far less pressure to have to figure out everything that happens in childhood. And part of this is also taking away this myth that everything that we are comes from early childhood conditioning. There is a huge amount of narrative in the world right now, mostly from secular empirical science and psychology, that says you know, most of who you are is somehow, you know, conditioned when you're born. But the astrology doesn't, that's not the truth of astrology. Astrology says that you are a transmigrating soul, and that the multiple narrative threads that are being pulled through this tapestry of your lifetime have backstories that you can't even begin to comprehend. They're personal, they're cultural, they're historical, they're ancestral. And it's much better in a sense to recognize the diversity of our own ecology in life, karmically speaking, because that gives us an opportunity to heal far more than saying, well, I was okay, and then at some point in the past, I got messed up, and I have to go back and sort of restore or redeem that innocence. That's similar to saying I was a blank slate. I got written on by bad experiences, and I have to go back to being a blank slate. They're very similar narratives, and neither of them are true to at least the spirit of ancient astrology. So karma is not punitive, it's narrative. Yes, you're born into a family with exactly the experiences and exactly the patterns that are due to your karma, but it's not a moral sense of, well, one time you got it wrong and then another time you got it right. You're talking about from start to finish, your lifetime will be filled with varieties of patterns that will express themselves very differently at different stages in life, and different levels of innocence versus adulthood and so forth. There's a story that James Hillman tells in The Soul's Code that I've always really loved. There's a bullfighter whose name was Manalete, and this is a classic example. Some of you may have heard it before, but as a child, you know, he was a very, very scared, timid boy, and may have had like a very overbearing, protective mother who wouldn't let him like experience the horrors of the world or whatever. She was overly like a helicopter parent, maybe. Now, the interesting piece about this is that when he was a little boy, he used to stand behind his mother's apron and pull it in front of him. He would hide behind it. So a normal, let's say, secular sort of psychology that's focused on healing childhood wounds and getting kind of, you know, happy in the present because you figured out your childhood wounds would say, oh, well, he became a bullfighter as an adult as a way of overcompensating for a childhood feeling of inferiority and an overbearing mother. So he has to overcompensate that for in adulthood and goes out and fights bulls, right? Okay, fair enough. But Hillman's point is that we need to also look at it from, you know, sometimes we think of life like from the roots going up, right? But he said he encouraged us to flip that image around and consider the roots of your destiny to be on the top, like a tree that's upside down, and the branches grow downward, so that the branches are in childhood, but that as life grows, we get closer to the roots of what our actual destiny is all about, what the daimon, so to speak, has called us to in this life. And so in the case of Manalete, another way of looking at his life, rather than the picture of, I had a broken childhood, have to fix it in order to be well in the future, is to say, look, when he was a kid, because it was his destiny to fight bulls, right? He was born into a circumstance in which he was already experiencing the bull out in the world. The same bull that he would fight later is there in the world out from on the other side of his mother's apron. And the fear he felt and the overprotecting mother is the matador's cape, right? And that this is like a pre-development of images that have another meaning at a different time in his life. And that, do you see how that takes the pressure off from, it takes the pressure off from the whole, well, you know, you overcompensated, you had an overprotective mother, it messed you up, blah, 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 right? At the same time, it's not that there couldn't be a way of turning the jewel of experience and seeing it as you had an overbearing mother, you overcompensated, you went out and fought bulls later in life. You see what I mean? The idea, though, is to be very careful that we're not allowing just one narrative about our history and our experience, but multiple streams of narration to come in. As much as the the narrative of past trauma and fixing past trauma in order to feel happy. As much as that perspective likes to, what should we say, defend the legitimacy of trauma. I am traumatized. Don't you tell me otherwise, right? That view has more in common with punitive karma. There was something good and then it got bad and now it is good. Now I need to make it good. And don't you tell me otherwise. That view is more punitive itself, which is ironic because the thing that view tends to get the most worked up about in some ways is if you were to say to such a person, or if you post a quote like I did, like Hillman's quote, you hear people saying, that's insensitive. That my trauma is real. It's real. It's real. You can't take it away. It's nobody's fault. It's not my fault. It happened to me and there's nothing that can change it. And, it's, you know, like that view, it not only does it see trauma through a very narrow lens, but it also very punitively, it sees the aggressor also through a very punitive lens, which is not to say that there is no such thing as an aggressor or that there is no such thing as a victim. Of course, those are archetypal realities that are real. It's just that they're not the only reality. So part of this is also in astrology sessions over the years is to help people understand not like, yes, you were victimized. Yes, there was an aggressor. You have to validate that because there's a way in which if that's not being validated, we're leaving something out and we're pretending it's all unicorns and that's not good. But I have to help clients all the time recognize your aggressor is more than just an aggressor. You are more than just a victim. Your childhood was more than just the trauma. Your adulthood is more than just the recurrence of the trauma. Suffering is more than just bad, right? And even good things are more than just good things. So astrology is always helping us to keep turning the jewel. The soul, if the jewel isn't turning, if the jewel of reality itself and experience itself isn't constantly turning and giving us a new entry point through which to love, to connect, to find meaning, to write out the poetry of our lives, we will not be happy. And that is the perspective of ancient astrology. That's the perspective of the great mystical traditions, you could say. We want to find the ecology of our pain, the ecological diversity of our pain, of our past, of our hurt. But we also want to find the ecological diversity of victims and aggressors. We want to find the ecological diversity of karma itself, because when we do so, we're finding God and we find the soul in those things. Now, along the way, let's just be sure that we say this again, because I know that trauma has a way of continuing to traumatize. And so releasing trauma is also going to be part physical and psychosomatic, which means that I often tell my clients, look, it's not just about changing their minds in an astrology reading. There's, you know, all of this is great helping people to see the patterns in different areas of life. But a lot of the times people also need to change the narrative actually in their bodies, which sometimes means that you have to do things like dance, you need to do therapy, you need to do for different forms of somatic releasing. I remember I'm saying this as someone who also drank ayahuasca for 10 years of my life, hundreds of ceremonies, and I should say hundreds of cups of ayahuasca and over 100 ceremonies. And that those experiences also have to do with the narrative changes in part because physically we give our bodies an opportunity on the cellular level. I don't know what level, just a very deep level to change our relationship to time, space, reality, our history itself. So it's not something that astrology alone can address either. And that's maybe the reason I keep it for last is that you also have to have, I think there's usually, I need to refer people at certain people who are really dealing with patterns that are really entrenched in the body and the physical responses of the nervous system, that you do need other things like yoga, or you need trauma release therapy. There are so many interesting things that are out there now. And sometimes you need that help as well, because you can't just do it in the head. It would be like trying to empty the ocean with a Dixie cup sometimes, right? So I want to say that as a caveat, because this work is not just mental work we're talking about. It is a mind-body connection, which is why also for the last 10 years of my life, in addition to astrology, you know, my wife and I owned a yoga studio and are regularly working with people in terms of, you know, just how do we change the story of our lives by changing the mind-body connection? So the body is a huge part of this and can't be left out. And a lot of times people, again, they hear this and they think, oh, it's a very mental way of talking about everything. But, you know, the body in ancient philosophy, that you go from subtle to gross. So the body is, the patterns of the body have their root in the subtle body, the mind, etc. So you have to work on both simultaneously. And to the degree that we want to think that trauma exists only and purely in the body, we're wrong. To the degree that we want to say it only exists in the mind, we're wrong. There's a connection between both. So, all right. That's what I have to say on this one. I spend a lot of time with people helping them to diversify and create a tapestry of their life experience and help them subtly, gradually release the idea that once upon a time you got messed up and the goal is to fix and get back to what you were before you were broken. The message is always in some ways to validate pain, but to say simultaneously, you're whole just as you are. You always have been, you always will be. And I find that that's one of the most powerful things that astrology can subtly bring into our lives. So that is what I have for you today. I hope you're enjoying this series. Don't forget that my new class, Ancient Astrology for the Modern Mystic, is coming up in November on the 14th. This is a class that spends a lot of time diving into the ancient philosophy and spiritual practices of astrologers in ancient times. And how do we make that relevant today? So if you're interested, check it out on my website, nightlightastrology.com. We still have room if you want to register. You can email me if you have any questions, info@nightlightastrology.com. All right, take it easy, everyone.